Hello and welcome to another episode on the Containers channel. I'm Matt McSpirit, technical evangelist for all of our data center technology, and in this episode, it's actually the start of a mini-series where we're going to be exploring container fundamentals. Those of you who've watched some of the videos already on the Containers channel, you'll know we've got a lot of demos of cool stuff. We introduced and had interviews with people from Docker. We met with John Howard, who explored his contributions to the Docker daemon as well. So we've covered a load of stuff, but we want to make sure that we're giving you the depth knowledge about containers as well. And to help me do that today, I'm joined by Neil Peterson. Neil, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your connection with containers.
Great. Thanks, Matt. So my name is Neil Peterson. I'm a content developer here at Microsoft. So really what I'm doing with containers is writing the documentation to go along with our implementation of containers, that is Windows Server containers and the upcoming Hyper-V containers. So I'm working with our virtualization team and John and Taylor kind of documenting containers. And as part of that, I'm playing around when doing research on the technology myself.
It's all very new to a lot of us, a lot of our IT professionals as well. So the documentation is critical. And this documentation approach that we've taken this time around for containers, putting it on MSDN, but also people getting access to it through Git and things like that, that's a big change for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we are, our documentation is available on GitHub. Community can contribute to it, make updates to it. And really, as far as Windows Server container and Hyper-V containers go, we're in technical preview, but we're documenting them quite a bit. So we're putting a lot of stuff out there pretty quickly.
And if you haven't checked out the documentation already, it's msdn.microsoft.com. If you do want to go down the MSDN route, /virtualization, and that will take you to the containers landing page. And there's a number of different scenarios that we documented for technical preview 3. Around getting your container hosts ready, deploying containers with PowerShell and managing them with Docker and so on and on Azure as well. So if you haven't, check out the documents, follow along, and also view the videos because they will walk you through as well and so you can see it visually. But today, as I said, is the start of a mini-series. We don't know how many episodes we're going to do. We're just going to keep them coming at you to help you understand and grasp the fundamentals at a bit more of a technical level, but helping you through a lot of demonstration as well. So Neil's been busy building these systems to enable to show you essentially how some of this stuff works in a bit more depth. And the first one, we're just going to be taking a look at an introduction really about just what containers are, that next level down from some of the videos we've done in the past, help you understand some of the building blocks and some of the key features, components, and concepts before we move on in future episodes to some more of the depth around things like images, networking, and so on. So why don't you take it away? Walk us through what we're going to learn about today in this particular episode.
Yeah, so for this episode, we'll just talk about what containers are. We'll create some containers. We'll look at some container images and really just start, like you said, laying the foundation to dig deeper into things like container images, networking, mm-hmm. portability of containers.
Okay, cool. So let's onwards with the... we only have a few slides for those of you who think, oh no, we can't do slides. We have a few and then we're ducking straight into some demos. So yeah, stay with it. Just helps us position some of the stuff as well.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, containers are without doubt on fire. Lots of people are talking about them. It's pretty early on in the technology lifecycle. I mean, containers have been around for quite some time.
On Linux. Yep.
But they're really taking off right now. So, you know, just to introduce containers and what containers are, because it's a weird abstraction. I mean, we've been working in virtualization for quite some time, and it's very easy to like compare a container to a virtual machine, but you know, what exactly are containers and what are we doing with them, or what can we do with them? So, I mean, at its core, containers really are kind of a component of virtualization. It's almost like an operating system or application virtualization. So really, essentially, we use containers similarly to how we would use a virtual machine. We virtualize this OS and we run applications from inside the container. Then we can access these applications from outside of the container. You can see here in my first bullet point, I call them out as an OS application virtualization and imaging or image layering technology. This is really important. A lot of the benefit we're going to find in containers, benefit being things like fast startup time or small footprint on the host OS, has to do with the way we can manage and create these images or how containers use these images. So I put that in the first bullet point there because images are hugely important to how containers work. And like we said, we're going to dive pretty deep into container images. So containers, OS virtualization. Mm-hmm. Containers host applications and application dependencies, and that's also critical. What we'll see is, you know, we're stuffing an application and all its dependencies in this container, and this container kind of becomes this self-contained unit that can then be moved around between environments, but it's got all those dependencies built into it. So we're not doing things like having to reconfigure our container as we move it around.
But do the dependencies have to live in that same container? Because you could layer them outside, couldn't
you? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can have multi-container applications where we might have like a, you know, a front end that has all the dependencies for the front end in one container, and then a back end that has all the dependencies for the back end in the back end. However, these two containers are dependent on each other. So they form an application.
And they themselves depend on the base image.
Sure. Yep, yep. Absolutely.
Okay.
We already kind of discussed it. Containers are built from container images. Container images are portable, and this is where it's really cool. I mean, we'll see in future episodes, we'll actually build an application on my laptop, move that container image up into what's known as a container image registry, and then pull that over into a VM in Azure. So it's this portability in images that gives us this great way of moving our work from one environment to another.
Mm-hmm. And that's the flexibility that a lot of our developers are seeing as well. You know, build an application locally on the workstation, knowing that from a consistency perspective, where I deploy it to your laptop, to a server in the data center, or to a public cloud, it's going to work.
Absolutely.
Because if it, the dependencies it will have, or it will pull with it, and you know, you've got that flexibility.
Yep, absolutely. So some of the benefit in containers, it's like, okay, we see that we're putting applications in here, but where are the benefits? Containers start fast. They scale fast. They can be destroyed fast. Mm. That footprint on the host is much smaller than that of a virtual machine, so we can gain this density on our physical computers that are hosting these containers. We can gain a greater density with containers than we can with a VM itself.
And in contrast to a VM, I think we're going to look architecturally in a minute, but when you're creating a VM, those who've got history with Hyper-V, you know, you'll be saying, how many virtual processors do I need? How much RAM? Do I need a virtual DVD drive? Do I need, how many networks? What networks do they need to be on? VLANs and so on. There's a lot more thinking about, from a virtual machine perspective, that hardware layer that is necessarily, it's just, it exists to a certain extent with containers in some aspects, you know, you can, but in terms of that very strict, this VM will have these virtual processors, that's very different.
Yeah, I mean, essentially we build a VM very similar to how we would build a physical machine. I mean, we need to define all of those components. Yeah, and a lot of that does go away with containers. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, that leads into this last point here as well. One of the things we can do with containers is kind of constrain the resource usage of that host. So, I mean, we can build a container and say, hey, use this much memory, or don't use more than this much memory, and, you know, use this amount of the CPU without going over it. So we can constrain what a container can consume from that host.
You don't want like a mega container
taking over.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just in the same way VM sprawl, I suppose container sprawl could be something to consider as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so compare and contrast with a VM. If we bring up the graphic that we've got on the next slide to help us illustrate, what are the key takeaways from this particular graphic that people should know?
Yeah, so pretty, I mean, if you've been doing research on containers, you've probably seen a very similar graphic. I mean, one of the biggest differences between a container and a virtual machine is kind of how the container works with the kernel on the host. So looking at the left-hand side here, we've got a virtual machine. We've got a hardware layer, we've got the OS and kernel of the host, as well as the hypervisor technology, and then we're layering virtual machines on top of that hypervisor. So each one of these virtual machines has an operating system and a kernel in it as well. So every time we boot up a VM, I mean, we're booting up a full OS, kernel, and everything.
And generally speaking, each one will have a virtual hard disk that will consume a potentially significant amount of space from your backend storage, whatever that may be. Yes, you can use things like differencing disks from a read-only parent image, but still, the consumption of storage typically associated with VMs can be quite significant.
Yep, absolutely. And then you've got these virtual machines kind of making hardware requests, and you get this hypervisor layer intercepting those requests and managing those requests against the hardware of the virtual machine host. Mm. So that's an image of a virtual machine. To contrast, a container host We've got the hardware of the container host. We've got the OS and the kernel sitting on top of that, as well as the container software, you know, the Docker engine, Windows Server Container Engine. But you'll notice here, that the container itself doesn't have that operating system. It doesn't have that kernel. So there's really a shared, these containers are sharing the kernel with the host OS. Mm-hmm. The boot up time is much quicker. There's a lot less going on when we start these containers versus a virtual machine.
And obviously this graphic is depicting, we just say hardware at the bottom here, but this could be physical hardware or it could be inside a virtual machine.
Yep, absolutely.
So there's nothing stopping these two different technologies coexisting happily, where you might need, for instance, you've got a Hyper-V host, you've got two VMs, one is Linux, one is Windows, and you run Linux containers on one inside one VM and Windows containers on another. But on that overall physical system, you're running a mix of containers.
Yep.
So you've got the best of both worlds, in essence, there, utilizing the complementary technology. So they're definitely not one or the other. They can be used in conjunction, which is important.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, at surface level, it's really, you know, simple to say virtual machines, we're sharing the virtual machines, we've got isolated kernel inside the VM. Mm-hmm. Container, we're sharing that kernel with the host OS.
Yeah.
Now, this picture changes a little bit when we're introducing Hyper-V containers, which provides an additional layer of isolation by kind of wrapping that container in a VM itself.
Yeah, and in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be having episodes on Hyper-V containers at the right point in time when they're available for people to test. So you'll see more episodes on the Containers channel that help people dissect just what a Hyper-V container is, because it certainly adds an extra layer of capability, but it's also quite complex to grasp as well about what's going on and this blended kind of set of technologies here. So,
yep, absolutely.
So yeah, stay tuned for that one.
Sure. So that's kind of the host VM, host container difference, but there's also some differences in the way we manage containers versus a VM that are kind of a shift, especially if you've been in a role where you've been managing VMs for a long time. And this is really how we use container images. So if you've been doing massive deployments of VMs, you probably are familiar with the concept of like a VM image, which is like a sysprepped version of an OS that we can deploy to a bunch of VMs and spin up a bunch of VMs in a rapid rate. A container image is very different than a VM image, and we'll see that. We'll dig into that deep, as well as the way we manage networking with our containers. So that's kind of different. It's different than how we would potentially manage networking with VMs, and we'll see that as well.
Okay, cool. So tell us a bit more, at least as an intro to these images you've been mentioning. I know in the next episode we're going to delve deeper, significantly deeper, into container images, but just give people the 10,000-foot view of images.
Yep, absolutely. And I do call this out because this is a hugely important part of working with containers. So what container images are is they're a read-only template that are used to start up a container with. These templates contain applications, they contain the dependencies for the applications, and they can also contain instructions that kind of like bootstrap the image. So like every time I start a container with this image, start this process. Mm. And we'll see that. These images can be comprised of multiple layers. So I might have a base OS image, like Ubuntu, and then I might have another layer on top of that that is my web application. And then for every container that I start on my host that's using that base OS image, they all share the same instance of that image. This is where we get that small footprint. Mm.
Optimized resource usage.
Optimized resource usage, and we can achieve that density by sharing these images, and we'll see an example of that as well.
Great.
I already talked about the images containing the execution instructions. And then finally, these images can be stored and retrieved from a container registry.
Right.
This is how we can achieve that portability. So develop locally, store in a registry, pull it over into my production environment.
So a registry, a repository.
Just a place. And there's we can have private registries. The one we'll look at in future episodes is a public registry, Docker Hub.
Right. Okay, cool. So I'm guessing that's a little bit of the background. Do you want to duck into a demo and show us how this stuff works?
Excellent. Yeah, so let's take a look at a demo here. So let me just size up my environment here. So I'm going to do a lot of these initial demos using Linux containers. That said, what I've got here is a Linux host running in Hyper-V
right.
on my machine right here. So while I'm working in Linux, I'm actually working against a Hyper-V virtual machine. And I'm going to be running a bunch of Docker commands. So Docker is, as we saw in earlier videos, is a container management system. We'll be using it here against Linux containers. I'll also show an example of using Docker against a Windows Server container as well.
Excellent. So again, and there is already some documentation on the MSGN site and on GitHub, where you can, if you want to get started with Docker and Windows Server containers, there's stuff there for you.
Yep.
So take it away.
So we'll just look at some basic commands. So I'm on my container host here. I'm going to do Docker images to see a list of images that I have on this container host. We can see I have three, Ubuntu, and then a couple others.
How do they get there?
So I got these through pulling them from the Docker Hub registry.
Okay.
So as an example, if I wanted to pull down a new image here, let's say maybe a MySQL image.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to run a command Docker search MySQL, and what it's going to do is reach out to the Docker Hub, so the registry, and return a list of images that have MySQL in the name. You can see here that we've got this column here, official, and kind of a little indication that this is an official image here. So I can see MySQL. It's an official image, and I can also see the stars.
Yep.
So these images can be rated on the Docker Hub.
Right.
You know, I kind of get some indication of, you know, through this view here, like, hey, that's probably the image I want to go after because I just want a very generalized MySQL image to build on top of. But there's quite a few other things in there.
It's interesting that so many people have uploaded what look like to be equivalents of the same image, even though there's one there that's great that you can use that's well rated already.
Yeah, but it makes a lot of sense. So I may want to take down this MySQL image, the official image, do a couple changes that relate to my application, and maybe post it back up to this public registry so that I can pull it out somewhere else.
Ah, right. I see. So I suppose if they'd have documented some of that in the description, like some of them just still say MySQL. So.
Sure, sure. Absolutely.
We need a good document, some good documentation hints for them.
Sure. Cool. So let's do this. Let's actually, so we saw a list of images on my machine. Let's go ahead and spin up a container and actually see, you know, build a container and see if we can do something with it. So if I actually run a command Docker PS, we can see the Docker PS basically returns a list of containers. We can see I have none here. If I do Docker PS-A, it returns a list of containers that are either in a started state or a stopped state. So again, I have no containers on this machine whatsoever. So I'm going to run a command Docker run dash IT. Basically, dash IT will start my container in an interactive mode and return my keystrokes to the screen. So I'm basically going to start a container and jump right into that container. Then I want to select the image that I want to use to create the container. I'm going to select my Ubuntu image and then give it a command. So I'm going to run in an interactive mode. What command do I want to run? In this case, I'm just going to open up the bash shell. And that quickly, my container has been created, and I am in my container at this point.
That was rapid.
This is very, very rapid.
And the container name, is it that long?
So this is part of the container GUID.
Right.
The container was also given a name. We'll take a look at that. We'll spill out of the container here in a moment and take a look at that.
Right. Okay, cool. But that was rapid.
Yeah. So within the container, if we take a look, I've got a file system. So behind the scenes, there's a bunch of stuff going on with container technology to facilitate this. So we've got namespace and process isolation. So whereas with a virtual machine, you know, we're spinning up a self-contained virtual machine. This container is running on this host alongside any other containers and using namespace and process isolation technologies from within inside this container. It looks like a complete and isolated instance of the Ubuntu operating system.
It thinks it's the only thing there.
It thinks it's the only thing there, essentially.
From a resource perspective.
From a resource perspective. So you can see I've got a file system here. So I can do something like make dir test.
You're creating a folder, essentially.
Yep. So I've created this folder, test. And I'm going to go ahead and jump out of my container by typing exit. So we can see that I'm back in the container host. If I do something like ls, we can see that I don't have a test folder here.
Yeah.
So pretty simple stuff, but let's take a look at that container that was actually created. So I'm going to run docker ps-a, and here you can see we've got the container ID that we saw before, but also the name, and it's kind of wrapping here. But you can see we've got this funny...
Has that been randomly generated?
Yep.
Determined Perl man?
Determined Perl man, yep. So randomly
it's
generated.
As good as any.
Yep. So, I mean, very simply, that was like a simple example of creating a container, modifying the container. So the modification that we did was creating a folder. Mm. We could have just as easily installed some software. So let's actually take a look at that. So I'm going to create a new container. And I'm also going to run this in an interactive mode using the Ubuntu.
The same base again.
Same base OS image. And I'm going to start the shell. So container has been created. I'm now inside of the container.
Different numbers and characters there, so you know it's different to the previous one.
Yep, absolutely. And now I'm actually going to install some software. And what we'll do is we'll install some software into the container. Once the software has been installed in the container, we'll jump out and then capture that into its own container image.
Right.
So we'll create a container image that's been derived from the base OS image of Ubuntu.
Okay.
So I'm going to run apt-get. I'm just going to install a text editor named vim. Actually, before I do that, we can see if I run the command vim, command was not found. So I'm using a package management technology in Linux called apt-get just to reach out, grab the software, and install it in the container.
Okay.
So again, I say install it in the container. There's some, you know, namespace, process isolation. I mean, there's some trickery going on at the container host level, but essentially that's what we're doing is installing the software here.
But inside that container, it's got a scratch space where it's essentially where the changes, I suppose, are captured. So this would be going into there, even though it thinks it might be, if it was in the Windows world, writing to C drive / Windows or whatever. It's not writing to the host Windows because that's in read-only mode, essentially, the base image. So it's capturing to a scratch space where, again, we can, like you say, save that off to an image.
Exactly. So that scratch space actually becomes that next layer in the image when we capture this container.
Okay. So it looks like that download and install is completed.
Yep. So I'm still in the container, so I'll run vim. We can see that my software has been installed. So let me exit out of that, and then I'm going to exit out of the container. Try that again. And so here's my two containers. Here's the first one that we created, and then the last one that I created. This has a name of...
Tender Chandrasekhar.
Yep. Thank you for pronouncing that for
me. I don't know where they're getting these very, very diverse names from compared to the two we've got.
Yep.
Based on the two we've got so far.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take this last container that we built, and I'm going to create an image from it. All right, so docker commit. I'm just going to grab the ID of the container, and I'll just name it vim. And that quickly, we can see this big, long GUID was returned. And now if I do docker images again, you will see that I have another image named vim. And so I'll do docker run. Again, I'll do interactive mode and vim and bash.
But now you could essentially, I know we're going to cover this in future videos, but you could essentially give this vim image to anybody.
Absolutely.
And they would be able to run it on their machine. Providing you had a Linux base, and it would just run.
Yep. Yeah, we can take that Vim image that we just created and push it up to Docker Hub, and then you can pull it down in your environment and just run it.
Cool. Nice.
So I just ran I just built a new container from that image, and I'll type in Vim, and you can see that there's the software.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's pretty simple stuff. And in the next video, we'll dig into images quite a bit more. We'll actually take a look at how an image derived from a base compares to that base, or we'll look at the layering. We'll actually take a much more microscopic look at kind of how that layering works.
Cool.
But to kind of round out the demonstrations for this first introduction, that was pretty simple. You know, we created a folder, we installed some software, but I also wanted to give kind of a full-fledged example of an application running in a container just to see something a little more practical.
Mm-hmm.
To do so, I'm actually, let me exit out of this container. Just get into a folder here. I'm going to use something called Docker Compose, something we can talk about in a future video. But Docker Compose is kind of an orchestration tool mm-hmm. that allows us to define instructions for deploying multiple containers and linking them together. It's really just an automation tool for deploying kind of a full application.
Right.
Based out of several different containers.
Okay.
So I'm just to kind of get this example up and running quickly, I'm going to use something called Docker Compose. All right. So Docker Compose dash Docker Compose up space dash D. Up. Let me try that again. I wasn't in the right folder. Docker Compose. Space dash D. That quickly, it spun up two containers.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do Docker PS, it can see that I've got two containers running. The images used were Neil Peterson front and then a MySQL image.
Mm-hmm.
And they are running on this system right now. So let me just grab the IP address of this system. And so what's happening here is I'm attaching to an application that's running in the front-ended container.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a simple little form that's going to insert some data into a database. So I'll just do C9. Won't actually fill this out. Click submit. And then I went to another page in that application, and you can see we're retrieving the data from actually a MySQL instance that was running on a second container there.
Nice. So that Docker Compose capability that you just used was essentially using some kind of configuration file.
Yep.
To go, I need this and this, boom. And you'd already configured those individually and it told them what to run when it started. So you'll see there local/bin/start for the MySQL and run.sh for the front end. Is that essentially what?
Yeah, let's just take a look at the file. So that's exactly what we're doing. I've just defined two containers in here. So my first container, I want to use this image. I've exposed some ports, which we'll talk about in the next video, and then just set some environmental variables, and then the same for my second container. So just an automated way of just, like I said, spinning up multiple containers, linking them together.
Nice.
Yeah, and again, my intention there is I really just wanted to show kind of a more practical example of what a container can do.
Yep.
You know, beyond just creating folders and installing software, but an application running from within a container.
Nice. Okay, so I suppose that concludes our demo. And that brings us to the end of this first episode on this mini-series on the Containers channel. There's some recommended resources we want to make sure that you're aware of. Firstly, you can download the Windows Server Technical Preview. Currently Technical Preview 3 as of time of recording. If you're watching this somewhere down the line, it might be TP4, it might be even later. It's still going to be relevant. So check out that. Review the containers documentation on msdn.microsoft.com/virtualization. There's Docker resources on docker.com/Microsoft. And to get started with Docker, there's links to the documentation as well, docs.docker.com/Windows. So lots of useful resources there. And join us again on the next video in this mini-series, where Neil and I will be exploring images in a bit more depth and networking and portability. So cool. Thanks. See you later.